Katie.
I'm Erica.
And this is Book Talk.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, Erica.
Hi, friends. Welcome to Book Talk.
Yay. Book Talk is a weekly podcast where we read a section of a book and then chat about it with our friends.
Aww. That sounds like fun. No, I like it.
It is pretty fun. We're having a great time.
We are having fun. This was a wild week with four chapters. I wish that we were reading all six chapters next week, but we're pacing ourselves and it's difficult. So to start with a quick recap, we read chapters 10 through 13. In chapter 10, we have Cap'n Vega kind of talking to the chief of police and getting everybody's intel out on the same side. Then they leave to go have dinner with Nell. In chapter 11, we find Charles Bright and learn that Evan Marsh had offered him some money to move the girls. So now we kind of are confirming that Evan Marsh had the girls and that he, in fact, was trying to move them before he was killed. And then we also find that this guy, John McKee, a known associate of the police and Evan, looks like someone that the older witness saw. Then chapter 12, Jamie almost ODs, and Vega has to go save her. Things are basically looking really bad for the girls in that chapter. There's just a lot of talk about how much time has passed. And then in chapter 13, we meet Dina's parents. Dina is the ex-girlfriend of John McKee, and they find out that they have a cabin where she's staying. It ends with a kiss and a gunshot. What's going to happen?
That was dramatic.
Drama, baby.
And in the most dramatic season ever of Book Talk. All right. A bachelor moment we had. It's fine. We're fine. Okay. So I think we've been starting this lovely thriller we're reading with kind of updated theories of what we think has happened. I think at this point, last week, I had said that we thought it was Evan Marsh who did it in the library with the gun. No, it was Evan Marsh who did it, but maybe that he didn't mean for it to go this far or this bad, but he was working with some bad actors that possibly took the girls and have them at this point. And then maybe that person also killed Evan Marsh. I think that's still kind of our working theory.
Yes, it definitely seems like the Evan Marsh thing is confirmed at this point. And that he was trying to parlay this into attention on his brother's disappearance. I am a little surprised now that we know that Evan was so comfortable talking to Vega about this. Like, he didn't seem very nervous at the time, which...
Well, he was also, like, cold sweating and running away from her and, like, possibly freaking out as well.
That's true. Yeah, it could have been all, like, an act. But I wonder at that point that they had the conversation, if he still had the girls and he was panicking, trying to think of how to get them out of his place because Vega's close by. You know, we can potentially return back to this later, but it's interesting to think about, like, there's this like theory that like, as soon as you observe something, it changes. It's like Schrodinger's cat, I think. And I wonder how Vega kind of getting close to Evan actually might have escalated the situation of the girls, because she's letting Evan know that they're on to him. His anxiety is increasing and he's like trying even harder now to get the girls out of where they are or to move them, and that might have pushed him towards someone like John that he might not have otherwise taken that path.
I think that's a good point. I think I'm so confused why... There's like two things with that theory that I'm a little bit confused at. Why is Evan Marsh trying to like move the girls? I get that it would have increased his anxiety, but like, why wouldn't he just be like, okay, I have them and I'm guarding the door with a gun. Give me, you know, open my brother's case again. I don't know. Something that was like more on the desperation path that we thought that he was on, instead of moving the girls. And also, we know that he offered Charles Bright $50,000 to move the girls. So like, how did he have $50,000, and how does that tie into like the girl's disappearance and him wanting to open up his brother's case? Just trying to figure out how that could come into play.
Yeah, I guess also I'm wrong. Oops, because the witness saw John in the car. So John was always part of this plan. But maybe John was the one suggesting that they pay someone to take the girls while the whole time John was planning on killing Evan and potentially killing the girls. So John may have been saying, I know, maybe he's like saying to Evan, don't worry about it. Like, I have money. I can cover this. Like, we just need to move them. But then ends up killing Evan or getting into a fight with Evan and then takes the girls up to this cabin where his ex-girlfriend is.
Yeah. I'm just, what's the motivation? I mean, I guess people have some pretty messed up, look at me not cussing, motivations between taking two girls and possibly killing them. But it's just interesting because I feel like we also know that Dina and John, from talking with her parents, are both kind of like, in their own words, like deadbeat people. So like, do they have 50K? And if they do, why are they in her dad's cabin where her parents know where they're at? Like, her parents were just like, yeah, she's in the cabin. You'll never be able to find it. But that's where she's at. So
I want to go back to their spaghetti dinner where he, like, they have this kind of workplace flirtation and then he escalates it to like more of this personal, like, come in and have dinner, meet my daughter. And that's where she starts to open up. I think, you know, Vega maybe has like this, like, unapproachable attitude that keeps people away from her. And then in this, we see how just this like act of like seeing Nell and meeting her and being charmed by Nell and also being cooked for, like, that just changes her whole approach to Cap. And then she kind of tells him more about her and her life. They go to the gun store and then like, it's kind of just growing from there.
Yeah. Her like confessing was interesting. I feel like she was starting to feel like letting her guard down a little bit, and Cap was definitely starting to notice that. And then I feel like out of nowhere, as an explanation, she was just like, hi, here are two really important parts of who I am. My mom died when I was young, and then my mentor and friend was literally stabbed in front of me and died walking. Like, that's kind of why I am the way I am. And also, is there a gun shop open? Because I'm feeling pretty anxious. And I just, it was very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought the gun store was an interesting like digression from that evening, because it's almost like you can see like, oh, this is like approaching normalcy. And then she's like, I just need to take a gun apart and I'll feel better.
Oh my God. I know. I thought that was so weird. She's like, I just need to strip this gun. And the lady who owns the gun store, which, you know, we love these women in traditionally male roles, she's like, yeah, I totally get that. Strip it. There's nothing in there. And Vega's like, great. Thank God. I've really got to strip this gun. Like, what? Yeah, we've all been there, inside of a gun store at night when they're not open. Okay, when we get back to Cap, what do we think about – I didn't get your opinion on what you think about Vega and Cap in this kiss and a gunshot at the end of the chapters.
I hated it. But mostly the kiss. I hated it. Okay, I have to say, I am enjoying the book. I mean, it's like – it is very exciting to read, and I definitely wanted to keep reading. I, like, desperately want to know what happens. But yeah, I hated this kiss. It was so awkward. It's also like she's standing there like basically begging him to let her just like go find these girls because 30 minutes is so important. And then she's like, but I have time to kiss you.
Okay, but it's not like they made out. It was like she just like kissed them. So it's not like it took 30 minutes.
So yeah, I mean, what do you think about that debate that they had of like, him saying, we have to go back, we have to call for backup, and her saying, like, you don't understand, like, 30 minutes could be life or death for these girls. Like, if they know that we're close, like, they might be irrational. Like, this could be an invaluable 30 minutes.
I feel like it's really hard to know what you would do in that situation. Like, I'm not a super huge risk taker, so I feel like I would have gone back, because I think Cap's point is well taken, that like, if they don't go back, and let's say they go in and there's more people than John and Dina and the girls in there, and they get ambushed and die, like, no one will know where they're at, and then no one will find the girls or Cap and Vega because they're in the middle of nowhere. I think that thought would force me to go back and just at least let somebody know, like, send a text, call a voice, something. This is where we're at. This is how you get there. Like, come, and then go back in. I feel like it's kind of crazy to try to do it by themselves.
The other thing that Cap doesn't say that I imagine could have happened is Dina's dad could have warned her somehow or tried to, like, he said, oh, there, yeah, like, I mean, wasn't a way of calling them. Oh, she does have a landline. Wait, but
he said that she hasn't paid the bill. So, I mean, okay. That part could be true. But who knows? I think let's move to Dina's dad and talk about that for a second. I mean, he was like, well, she has a landline, but it might not be working. He seems extremely sympathetic to her, but his wife is not. So, I mean, I don't think it's unlikely that he could have turned the landline back on for her because he wants that connection. I think watching Dina's parents and watching Charlie's parents is, like, very heartbreaking. These people have done a lot to hurt their parents who are just, like, still unfailingly seeing the good in them, which is, like, it's sad to watch. And I think that happens a lot when, like, drugs are involved. Believing that, like, your kid is still good underneath it all, it's really hard to see, like, them not be good. I think it's really hard when he sees Dina with the girls for the dad.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, parent parallels in this story of, like, the importance of parents, of people who have lost parents who, like, seem to be perfectly fine, like Nell, where, like, her parents are divorced, and yet she seems, like, very well adjusted, like very put together. And then we have people like Jamie who have like tense relationships with their parents. And then Dina, whose parents, you know, she's had these issues with her stepmom. And yeah, I think I guess this is the moral of the section we read this week. It's like, you don't know how you would react in these situations. Like, you don't know how you would react if it was your child. You don't know how you would react if it was your parents who got a divorce. It's like we're all kind of just doing the best that we can. And, yeah, I thought the stepmom kind of had enough distance to be like, she also stole from us and, like, crossed a line, and I'm not going to help her. And she, like, if she's harming someone else, this is also a line.
Wait, is it her stepmom? I think it's her mom. I mean, she's like, that girl didn't need John McKee or anyone else to turn into a deadbeat. She did that all by herself. Started sniffing glue and paint thinner when she was 12 years old. So I feel like, but maybe it's her stepmom. Either way, she is clearly put up a wall like, that bitch stole $8,000 from me. And also is just like, I think seeing things a little bit more clearly. And I think that's kind of a lot of times how a lot of partnerships are. I'm not a parent, but if I had to guess, like, when things get really bad, I would assume someone is probably seeing it more clearly. Whoever, and even if you're not a parent, like, when things get bad, there's usually one half of the partnership is, like, thinking logically and clearly, and the other one is, like, emotionally not able to do so. And I think she's just, like, she's not a good kid. Bad things could be happening. Here's the address.
You know, the other parent that plays a big role in this section is Jamie, who is really, like, has been on a path downwards. Interestingly, Vega seems to be the one who's, like, able to, like, comfort her and get close to her. Why do you think that is?
I think that's because she feels like Vega's the only one talking straight to her, which may be why Vega's always like, I tell the families everything. And I think that does build trust because you know that good or bad, they'll tell you. And I do feel like that she's developed that with Vega. Like, she knows, and she knows she's a straight shooter. She's not this emotional person. She proves that again and again. And as much as that probably bothers Jamie, I think she's like, well, I know she's not going to lie to me. And I think this is the sad part too, when they talk about how many kids they found after a week, because it is not a lot. Let's do some talk. Yay. Erica, how are you?
I'm fine. I've been reading this, like, Women Who Run With Wolves. It's way different than I thought it was going to be. It's like these, like, folklore stories. And then she's, like, taking a very academic approach and, like, using, like, Jungian psychology to, like, analyze these old stories. I love it.
Oh, interesting, because you thought you were going to hate
it. It's so good. No, I
thought
it was, like,
never judge a book by its cover.
I don't know what I thought I was reading. Like, I thought it was going to be, like, a self-help book, which it is kind of more, like, positive psych, like, let's, like, psychoanalyze yourself. But I'm, like, I think it's fascinating so far.
I started watching Schitt's Creek for the first time. Have you seen Schitt's Creek?
I have feelings about Schitt's Creek.
Oh, should we not talk about it?
No, we can talk about it. So James is also obsessed with Schitt's Creek.
Okay, well, I don't want to know your feelings. I just started it and I'm really behind the times, obviously. But I got COVID, so time to catch up on TV I never watch.
Yes, Katie is ill, if you can't tell. Yeah, I don't know. Thankfully, she's still gracing the airways so we can keep reading this book together.
I took a whole day off work so I'd have enough energy to do this podcast.
Oh, no. Do you want to say how you're feeling? What symptoms are you experiencing?
Oh yeah, I'm telling every single person now, whether I know them or not, my symptoms, because everyone wants to know. So it's put it out in public. No, I just feel like I have a sinus infection, and a headache and body aches, which are both very weird. And I don't have a fever. The weirdest thing is I lost my sense of taste and my sense of smell, which is truly upsetting. It is not fun to eat when you can't taste it. It's so weird. I don't know. I can't even explain it. Because people are doesn't that happen when you have a cold? And it does, but you can still kind of tell what things taste like. It's just dull. Everything tastes like air. It's like eating matter. It's so weird.
I've had two girlfriends in New York who had also had COVID, had mild cases. You know, they're on the younger side, and both experienced the loss of taste, and they said the same thing. It's the worst part of the whole ordeal.
Also, I'm married to a chef who's on a 10-day paid furlough at home cooking amazing meals, and we can't see any other humans, and I can't enjoy them. It's truly – he's cooking me 3 meals a day, and I can't eat any of them.
It's torture. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to, take COVID lightly, but I also don't want to talk about it too seriously because you currently have it, and I don't want to freak you out. But I do know,
Thank you.
There's been a wide variation in, how severe it is, and mm-hmm. I'm glad at this point it seems like you just have a bad cold, and I hope you feel better soon.
Thank you. Me too. Yeah, I mean, it is obviously a wide variation, and cases are shooting up. So wear your masks and stay at home.
Yes. And, we don't know for sure exactly where and when you caught it, but you were working the polls. And I didn't know this until today that actually you were not allowed to turn people away from the polls if they didn't wear a mask. They were allowed to just show up without a mask. Oh,
yeah, for sure. No, I had plenty of people without masks. No rules. But also, we don't want to do anything to suppress the vote, so.
Sucks. It's so hard.
It's like.
I can't believe we had an election in the middle of a pandemic. I just can't believe that all happened.
Mm-hmm. I will say I only had a couple of people, blatantly not wear masks, but I was behind a, piece of plastic wrap. Literally plastic wrap, we made them. So I was behind that, and people would, say their name, and then I would be like, what was it again? Because there might be 17 very similar names, not because I couldn't hear, is it Adrian or Andrea? And then they would take off their mask and yell it at me. Okay, that wasn't what I needed to happen there. So it could have definitely been from the polls. That's really, I feel like the only time I was really out of my pod.
Yeah. So. I also want to if you got it because you were working the polls, you took the place of usually older mm-hmm. women who work the polls by being there. So
it's true.
And that would have been much more difficult.
To get over. Statistics so show you. That they would not fare as well as I'm currently faring. Yeah. I mean, hopefully this is it. So we shall see.
Yeah.
And if so, I'm lucky and grateful.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can watch Schitt's Creek, but I'm also upset because I told you to watch British Bake Off, not Schitt's
okay,
Creek.
Well, the Schitt's Creek was last night, and I haven't watched any TV yet today, so still time to watch.
Put wait, it's called that British Bake British Off on Bake Off. The Great okay. British Bake
also,
Off, or the Great British Baking Show.
I've seen that.
No, that's what it is.
The Great You've British seen Baking. Erica, the Great British. I'll double check, but I think the Great
no,
British
no.
Baking Show.
Yeah.
If that's what you're saying by the word bake off, yes, I've seen it.
Oh, my God. Okay, yeah. No, it's the same thing. So basically
where it's
there
the
was
10
like,
people in the tent?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I love that show. I've definitely seen
yes.
it.
Yes. Okay. I was like, you have to watch
I also
to
have
watch
to catch
with
The Bachelorette. Yeah.
I mean, Tayshia.
Do you love her?
I'm obsessed. I love her.
Okay,
I think
wait.
I'm in love with Tayshia. But I think we all are.
I mean, I haven't seen it yet, so I'm going to watch it tonight. That's what I'm going to do after this. I'm going to eat some more tasteless food by my lovely husband.
Book Talk is made by me, Erica Bailey, and Katie Cheney, with production support from Dan White. Our theme music is by Dan White. We'll see you next week. Wow, I feel like this is really degrading my brand as the, like, podcast intellectual deep thinker, because now I'm just going off on how not only do I watch The Bachelorette, it's so true. Not only do I watch The Bachelorette, but I listen to multiple podcasts about The Bachelorette after I watch it.
Okay, well, you didn't have to go that far into your personal decisions.